Hi, it's me, but I'm not Patsy, I'm Bria, filling in at Joy on Paper Radio, the radio show for writers, for those who dream of writing, and for those who want to know the story behind the book. And it's such an honor to be here for a special science fiction themed show. I'm adjusting my mic here and I'm waving at Big Ed saying thank you, Big Ed, for all your help this morning. And now we are going to our very special show. We have two absolutely fantastic guests, Steve Raza. And when he gets on here, he's going to help me pronounce his last name because it's spelled a little uniquely. He is our very first guest. And for our last half of the hour, we will have New York Times bestseller Veronica Roth joining us. So we're going to start by playing the book buzz that I did for a book called Victory's Wake. And that's the book by Steve. And go ahead and play that, Big Ed, and then we'll get on with Steve.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2021 Space Fleet series starter, Victory's Wake, by Daniel Gibbs and Steve Raza. The co-authored novel is Deception Fleet Book 1, available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. The last battles have ended between the Terran Coalition and the League, but the Galactic Cold War has just begun. Intelligence Officer Jackson Adams receives new orders fresh off an undercover mission from the Coalition President himself to get to the bottom of a refugee crisis at the border world of Afindigra, where an unknown entity is suspected of human trafficking and other heinous crimes. Could it be League infiltrators, and if so, what is their endgame now that they have lost the war? Adams assembles a squad that includes flight surveillance and munitions experts, all of whom have questionable methods according to the powers that be. Still, Adam's faith in his team's abilities will be tested to the max against the nefarious enemy striking in dark corners of the galaxy, where the most vulnerable have become unwitting victims. This military space opera blends political science fiction with Mission Impossible spycraft, and it's a page-turning thrill ride that's both thought-provoking and infused with the right measure of faith and hope. Co-authors Steve Raza and Daniel Gibbs have collaborated on the 6 novels of the Deception Fleet series. Raza is a fan of all things science fiction and superhero and an avid student of history. Gibbs hopes to bring an authentic lens to military science fiction, especially around the trials and tribulation of those who serve. This is Bria Burton with your Futuristic Fiction Fix, signing off.
Okay, so now that you've heard a little bit behind the book, we're going to bring Steve on. Steve, welcome to Joy on Paper.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I am thrilled that you're here with us. Can you correct me if I have said your last name incorrectly? Tell me how to pronounce it.
You're pretty good. Most people say it Raza, but since I'm from southern New Jersey, it winds up being Raza a little more nasally.
Uh-huh,
okay. Because that's how folks from southern New Jersey talk.
Understood.
So, yeah,
understood.
That does it.
Okay,
you got
great.
It.
Well, we're thrilled to be talking to you today and to talk about your book. I'm here in the studio holding up a paperback copy of your book so that watching on my Facebook live stream or on the YouTube channel can see what this great cover looks like. And the first thing I wanted to ask you about, now this story is very much we've got a main character, but we also have the team. So there is our spy, Jackson Adams, and then he takes on this team to go after these League infiltrators that are potentially human trafficking, all sorts of heinous war crimes. There's a refugee crisis. I mean, this is quite the large scale scope story. And then we've got this wonderful team. Can you just tell us a little bit of how you decided to build this team that Jackson essentially works with, our protagonist works with, these other characters that help move the story along?
Sure. I had met up with Dan online, I believe actually through the Realmmakers Consortium, when Dan was looking to expand his story world, his Terran Diaspora story world, which he started off with a series called Echoes of War.
Okay, yes.
It came out several years ago.
Yeah, we should mention Daniel Gibbs is your co-author. So yes, thank you for bringing that up.
So this is all Dan's story world that he's created, and I'm privileged to be able to write in that story world with him. And so for Deception Fleet, what he wanted to do was his Echoes of War series dealt with the last several years of this big war between the Terran Coalition and the League of Sol. And he was looking for specifically a Cold War style series. It takes place after the war. You know, there's spies running around, there's covert actions, but there's no open warfare, no open fighting, not anything that either government will admit to either.
Anyway, right, yes.
What we talked about was his vision was kind of a Tom Clancy Ops Center feel. So if you've ever read a few of those novels, and I had prior to this just for fun, the Ops Center series dealt a lot with, you know, you'd have an aspect that dealt with politics, you'd have one that dealt with kind of the behind-the-scenes spycraft, and then you'd have one that dealt with military or covert action out in the field. And it combined all of those elements. So that's what he was looking to work on with this series. But I kind of had free rein when it came to creating the characters, which was a lot of fun.
Yes, yeah.
So we kind of, you know, we hit upon having these a few members of the military, intelligence being the leaders of the team, and then it was my idea to have some civilian members because I figured the civilian members could break the rules a little more.
Right.
It wouldn't be as bound by protocol and things.
And Gina's one of my favorite characters, and that's her kind of MO is she's often off doing her own thing, and everybody's like, oh, that's not by the book.
Gina I think is my favorite too, actually. I mean, I like all five of the team members just because I went out of my way to give them very kind of outside personalities.
Right.
And, you know, you've got Warren Dwyer, who's the pilot, but also is very not careless with explosives, but everybody thinks he is.
Right. Yes.
And then Brant is you know, kind of the voice of reason on the team, who's a little bit on the more nervous side of things, but he's the tech wizard. And then, of course, Sev, the guy who's kind of the... He's a refugee himself, I guess you'd say. He was when he was a kid. And now he's a mercenary for hire.
And so
it was really fun combining all of those personalities into one cohesive unit.
Yeah, you've got this great dynamic with all of them.
Thanks. As a side note to that, one of the things that Dan had been doing also to continue interest in the book series is he put out a anthology of short stories. Last year called Courage, Commitment, and Faith, Tales from the Coalition Defense Force. And so if people are interested in that anthology, there is an origin story. Before I came up with the name for the short story, I called it Jack Meets Gina.
Okay.
Because it really is about how Jack and Dwyer and Brant are on their, you know, military operation. And they inadvertently run into Gina and Sev doing their own thing.
Okay.
And they cross paths and butt heads. And it's the origin of how this team first got put together.
Oh, that's fascinating. So that's something if people go to your website, they could see where that short story is available.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, all of Dan's work is on Amazon, his entire series.
Okay, so this is the first book that you... Was this your first time collaborating with Daniel Gibbs?
It was, yeah. We did a 6-book series for the Deception Fleet crew. Made it into a bit of a spy versus spy thriller, as you may have caught on there with his opponent on the other side of the line.
Yeah, that another thing is you have a great villain here that... When you get his perspective, you know, I find sometimes there's the villain that you do sympathize with. This one, I didn't sympathize much with him at all, but it's okay. It worked. Yeah. It's very Clancy-esque in that.
Nobody was really supposed to sympathize with him.
Yeah, he really is just a bad guy, and we want our heroes to win. So.
Yeah, I knew I could go either way with it. I'm like, you know what? I'll just back up a little bit and go with a straight up villain for this one.
Yeah, and I think you've hit a good genre to do that in this, where we're out in, you know, the deep space galaxies, this coalition that essentially has this refugee crisis. We've got all these people flooding in, fleeing from the League, and this one planet, and you can correct me if I'm saying this wrong, Afendikra, is that the right?
No idea, but that sounds good to me.
Okay, oh, sure. So that's the planet.
It's a Greek-derived word that I kind of made up, and I'm like, that sounds great. But
we're not sure how the locals pronounce it there, but yeah, that's how we'll pronounce it. So this planet is kind of the hot spot, almost like a border planet, that all these refugees are fleeing, and then there's really not enough resources for all the people that are going there. But then the League is snatching people, and we see this villain doing his thing. So as you're diving into this world, and you talked about the parameters, how you got to create these characters within another author's created world, basically. How much of the, you know, were these planets and the coalition and the League, were those already in place, and so you're just kind of taking the setting and the world and throwing these characters into it?
Yeah, so the coalition itself and the League had existed, like I said, in Dan's Echoes of War series. So he really fleshed out the story world there. And I read all of those books prior to starting on it. And so he had some parameters that, you know, I needed to follow. It's a bit like if you were writing in the Star Wars world, you have to get approval for different things to do.
Yes.
And so I could make up situations and planets. And for example, you know, the Frontier Enforcement group.
Mm-hmm.
That is like the civilian border patrol, not military, but it's a border patrol group for the coalition. He and I brainstormed when I got to that point. I'm like, okay, well, we need this kind of group, right? So we went back and forth and brainstormed how that was going to work,
okay. What
its name would be, things like that. So there was collaboration on some things like that, where other things, again, with a lot of the characters, I had free reign. Portions, of course, the portions that take place with Colonel Sinclair.
Yes.
And his ship, the Oxford, and then scenes that take place with the president and his chief of staff. Those are all characters who existed before in Dan's series. So I was writing them, trying to write them as closely as to how he wrote them as well.
Yes. Yeah. And there.
So it was a fun challenge.
Yes. And there is. For me, I'm a Christian. I enjoy faith when it can be infused effectively in a book. So can you talk a little bit about the faith element? And for me, it was not preachy. There were characters who had faith. Some did, some didn't. Will you talk a little bit about decision-making as an author for making some of these characters faith-based characters?
Well, that's kind of been the way I've approached a lot of my books in the past several years, is that anytime I do faith elements, and they, you know, overwhelmingly tend to be Christian, I do frame it in that way of I'm looking at the character and seeing what the character is like and how their faith comes out in them versus what the entire book says about faith in a general or preaching sense. So, you know, I had done another small series of novellas, Vincent Chen series, in which it's all from his perspective, first person, and he is a Christian. So you get more of that in a way, just because that's how his point of view is with regards to the faith. With this one, yeah, it was more of a taking it character by character. So, you know, Jackson is not really, he's kind of wishy-washy, whereas Brant is like the moral center of the team. I would say.
Yes, yeah, that's a good way.
The moral and faithful center of the team.
That's a good way to put it.
And then other characters, you know, yeah, and other characters, it was based on whether Dan had written them that way. And then with some of the newer ones, I had a little more license to, okay, is this character going to have faith, strong element, or not? And so some of that was just making that decision on a case-by-case basis as I went. Story.
Okay, yes, and some of the other aspects, we've got wormholes, we've got the antimatter engines. Were those already part of the world as well?
Those were already in place. So Dan's whole system of faster-than-light travel, kind of like if you're talking about Star Trek using warp drive,
yep,
or Star Wars fans know about hyperdrive, Dan's system is I'm not sure which one it would be more similar to, but it's a drive system that generates mini wormholes, just enough to kind of vault your ship from one place to the other, real fast.
Mm-hmm.
So both those networks of nations use that. The backdrop a little bit is that during the war, the League of Seoul had inferior ships, but they produced lots of them cheaply, and the Coalition had fewer ships, but they had a decided technological advantage. So in this aftermath, the Coalition still kind of has this technological edge. Their Lawrence drive, it's called, is slightly better than the League's wormhole drive. So they're able to use that to their advantage. And they do have these antimatter power systems that were experimental in Echoes of War and are now a little bit more widespread in their fleet, but the League doesn't have that technology. And so that increases your speed and your range. So again, it gives the Coalition a little bit of this edge that they can go a little bit faster and a little bit further than the League can go.
Uh-huh. Okay, yes. And so were there any aspects in the novel that you got to throw in some tech that was your own invention, or was most of it just already established in the games?
It was a mix. So I did get to throw a few things in there, like the whole background of Jackson having this technological background where he can fix these skimmer vehicles. Yeah, it's basically just like hover motorcycles.
Right,
like the speeders that you see on Star Wars and things like that, because I've always loved those. I'm like, that'd be a good little homage to put in there.
Okay,
It makes for really fun riding, you know, people zipping around on the equivalent of a flying motorcycle in it.
Oh, yes, yeah.
That was the one I enjoyed the most. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, there's this great moment where we have our spy, you know, I think I had Mission Impossible music kind of playing in my head through some of these scenes, because you've got Jackson who's infiltrated these different. So he's basically a mechanic at one of these places he's infiltrated to try to get some information. And yeah, there's I won't give stuff away, but there's a bomb planted. And so, yeah, there's all sorts of interesting ways that you've incorporated all these great elements of the Mission Impossible feel, of the Star Wars feel, like you said, with the speeders and mashing those things together, to me, in the best sense of this compelling story.
Yeah, and it was really fun, you know, playing with that technological edge, giving Gina all sorts of fun gadgets that I just kind of made up on the fly.
Uh-huh.
As it's going along, like, oh, I need this kind of thing for this thing. And I'm going, does this already exist in the story world? Doesn't look like it. Okay, that's fun.
Yeah.
And you know, on the other side of it, I really enjoyed, you know, it didn't really start out this way, but by the halfway point of the series, I'm like, you know what? Jack and Gene are just like really good pals. And I'm just going to play it this way. It's almost like this brother-sister relationship.
Sort of.
I mean, there's a little bit of flirtation there, of course. But there's a whole other storyline that we won't get into with Jackson and his love interest. So once that developed, I was like, wait a minute. So then she can't be that necessarily. So I really leaned harder into this whole thing of like they've become, you know, really close friends.
Yes.
Throughout the whole series, which I wanted to do different, because it feels like inevitably in these kind of stories, you know, the main character lead and the main female lead, there's some sort of romance that blossoms. I'm like, nah, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, and honestly,
sorry for the spoilers, but...
Well, meaning that's kind of refreshing, like that you can have this platonic relationship, they're working together, but it's also, they can be friends, and it's okay that it stops there. I know there are readers who want to see romance in everything they read. I personally am not one of those readers. I was totally okay with the fact that it was platonic, but it's still this great friendship, and that I think that's what's so neat about science fiction, is that we take things in our real world and infuse it into these fantastical situations in other worlds, but as the reader in this case, I could put myself there. I could relate to these characters. I could see what their motivations were. So tell us a little bit about your writing background. Now, you've done this collaboration with Dan, but you also have your own novels that you've written.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started writing, oh golly, probably like semi-seriously in high school, and then a little more seriously in college, and then a lot more seriously after I graduated.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so my first book set which was called The Word Reclaimed and The Word Unleashed, were published by Marcher Lord Press back in 2009 and 10. And it's they were actually one manuscript originally, and they were published as two separate books. A kind of classic space opera, Star Wars / Star Trek adventure.
Sure, yeah.
Leaned a lot more heavily on the faith aspect. And so I wrote several books in Marcher Lord Press for several years. That later became Enclave Publishing, with whom I have a total of 5 books now, I think.
Okay, yes, and, yeah.
And then at some point I also transitioned into working independently. So I have several different book series. You know, I've got my Mercury Hale Monster Slayer series, which is, you know, much more irreverent, kind of snarky. If people are familiar with Jim Butcher's Harry Dresden Wizard story,
yep,
it's kind of a hallmark callback to that. You know, it's this first person kind of snarky hero. His whole thing is that he's, you know, learning how to be a responsible adult as he's tackling these world-ending threats. And then I have a handful of other books with different small publishers or independently that just run the gamut from fantasy to a few smaller steampunk books, but mostly science fiction.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. And tell us where can people find your books? What's the address to your website?
So my address is steveraza.com, RZASA for the last name. And you can go there and click on the books tab, and all of my books are listed there.
It's an impressive catalog, because I'm there right now, and it's neat to see how many books you've put out. And I actually appreciate, right on your books page, you have a column on the left that says PG, and then a bunch of books, and then a column the next line down, the row down, says PG-13. That is not something I see very often with books in general.
Well, yeah, and it's some other time we could go into the whole thing of how the rating systems developed for movies and how they didn't develop for books, because it's just a fascinating history that involves Supreme Court rulings and the movie industry taking on their own impetus to do these kind of things. But it really came up because the more I went to Christian book events and things like that, you know, parents would have questions like, well, what about, you know, swearing, sex, things like that in books? And so it occurred to me, I was like, well, I can organize my books that way pretty easily without having to do individual things to all the books, you know?
And that's, that's great. And you do list this book, Victory's Wake, as a PG-13. There is a little bit of swearing. It's not pervasive, but there are a couple characters.
Yeah.
I would say...
And that was because when we were working on the series, I asked Dan about that. I said, you know, with you, and I read it in his book. I'm like, okay, so I see you have some swearing. And he had limits on those kind of things, and his philosophy on it is basically that in the military, when military guys get into harsh situations, they are definitely not clean language people. That was his take on the whole situation.
Understood. I think people,
you know, the
are...
swearing just kind of comes out in stressful situations. And that's why in the book it kind of ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
Because when people are having normal, quiet planning conversations, they're not swearing at all. But if they're under fire and things are going haywire and the tension is rising a little bit, then, you know, that slips here and there. But it really isn't. It's pretty mild compared to most other things.
Well, Steve, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm thrilled that you were here with us. And ladies and gentlemen, check out his book, Victory's Wake, co-authored with Daniel Gibbs. Steve, have a great day, and thank you for chatting with me.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye now. Okay, well, thank you, listeners, for joining us for this wonderful show. Oh, and Patsy will be back Tuesday at 11 a.m. for her next Joy on Paper. I hope you all have a wonderful day. And those in Clearwater, Florida, where we are here in the studio, I believe there's a little bit of rain out there. So be careful on the roads, and make sure if you're a writer that you're out there writing. If you're a reader, enjoy your next book. Take care. Bye-bye now.